Talk to me a little bit about the background here. Why is it that we wanted to find out what kind of microbes are swimming around in the air?
Well, it's really an important spinoff from our biodefense projects here in the United States, where there's been an effort to make like a smoke detector for your air, and instead of detecting smoke, of course, detecting pathogenic bacteria. And the problem has been, in the past, the difficulty has been making sure that your alarm goes off only when there's a pathogen and not when there's a non-pathogen that might be related to the pathogen. So to prohibit false alarms, we need to make sure we know what kind of bacteria in the air normally, and then we can detect the threshold or find the threshold of bacteria or the types of bacteria that should send an alarm.
In the past, scientists have just kind of put petri dishes out there and kind of cultured and seen what's out there and is growing. But my understanding is that's turned out not to be a very effective way of finding out what's really out there.
That's exactly right. In the past, when you take a sample of air, water, soil, the laboratory process usually brought some of that material back into the laboratory, and then the scientists would make up a component of a mixture of nutrients and the right pH and control the right salt solution and make an auger plate or a broth. And then with the things that grew, you'd enumerate and identify. You would start getting the biochemical characteristics of that, even give these names and call these things new species when they were found from the environment. And then the problem is with that is less than 1% of all known bacteria can even be cultured. Many things, scientists haven't figured out what the right nutrient mix is or the right concentration of air that can be in the environment for this organism to live correctly. So most of the things we haven't even grown yet.
So therefore,
when you take a sample from the atmosphere using that technique, you're only taking a very small, thin slice of the total diversity that's really there.
So what you developed was a brand new method of checking out what's in the air called a DNA array. Can you talk to me about that?
Sure. It's a technique where you can parallelly find many or detect many types of DNA at the same time. So when we actually are looking at a bacterial profile from an environment, for instance, aerosols, we can look for about 9,000 types of bacteria all at once. And this is a big step forward where in the clinical lab, for instance, when you're trying to detect bacteria in a medical sample, usually you have to predetermine that you're going to look for Clostridium or you're going to look for anthracis, Bacillus anthracis, the cause of anthrax, for instance. And you have to have a specific test for each one, which is highly, highly useful if you have a hypothesis of what type of bacteria might be in your sample. Now, when you're doing a census of all the types of bacteria in an environmental sample, we don't really know exactly should be in the air ahead of time. So we had to develop a test that would go ahead and test every single type of bacteria that's ever been documented and is in the literature. So to do that, we had to build this microarray, which is based upon testing for DNA signature sequences in each organism.
So the array itself is about the size of a quarter, and what's in that quarter?
Well, this quarter-sized piece of glass is covered with DNA probes. And what I mean by that is because DNA sticks to DNA that's like it, because you know that complementary strands of DNA always stick together if they exactly match, on this glass surface, we're able to put a small piece of synthetic DNA that matches the DNA of each type of organism. Then when you take an air sample and get all the dust out and just reduce it down to DNA by extracting out just the DNA from the air, you can put this DNA on the glass surface in a buffer, a liquid buffer, and then the DNA that's in your target sample, like the air, will stick to the glass surface in its precise locations, because on the glass surface is a grid of 700 rows by 700 columns, say about 500,000 spots of DNA. Each one has a different sequence. So when your target DNA from the atmosphere, for instance, sticks upon the glass surface, you have a fluorescent event occurring, and then at the exact coordinate of that fluorescent event, we can record with the scanner which type of DNA must have stuck to that surface. From there, we can infer which types of organisms were in the sample.
Now, the methodology here was kind of interesting. You selected two towns in Texas and tested over a period of several weeks. Why this particular area?
Well, this is important because we wanted to test whether the town that you're sampling has a greater effect upon the type of bacteria in the air compared to the weather conditions. And so we wanted to pick two towns that were fairly close in location, but were still pretty large metropolitan areas with a large population and still had all the urban activities. So we want to pick a couple of cities that are close by, but fairly similar. And then also we had to test that, all the cities that we'd like to do against what we could get samples from quickly enough to run this test. So this is 2000. In 2003, there's a large sampling effort going on. It's called the BioWatch Project, which the Department of Homeland Security has funded for a few years now to test by filtering the air from many cities and then taking these filters and testing for certain, about a dozen pathogenic bacteria and other microorganisms. So we were able to get some of these filters and run our full test of 9,000 bacteria, and that's how we started our census. So these two cities we thought were good candidates for the beginning of this this analysis.
Okay, and that's San Antonio and Austin, right?
Right, San Antonio and Austin.
It's 12 minutes before 10 o'clock. We're talking with Todd DeSantis, Principal Research Associate in the Earth Science Division of the U.S. Department of Energy's Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. And you're listening to Midday Utah on KPCW Park City, KCPW Salt Lake City. So you found that there literally were thousands of different bacteria swimming around out there.
Yes, we were ourselves surprised by the diversity that is contained in a daily sample of air. And, yeah, over 1,500 types we're finding in these urban aerosols. And this type of number has only been seen in the soil. So you can imagine in the soil when you grab a handful, you're finding thousands of different types of bacteria because you have lots of different nutrients right there in the soil. So there's many different niches for the bacteria to live in. So you have many different types. In the aerosols, we figured the aerosol would be mostly just a moving spot for certain bacteria to jump around, but there's nothing really to metabolize in the air itself, so there might not be that much diversity. But when we ran our analysis, we found that these thousands of types, this is close to what's been found in farm soil, which is pretty rich in diversity of bacteria. So this opens up a whole new challenge for us in biowarfare detection, for instance, that we have to really tune our pathogen detectors to only find the pathogen and not the all the other types of bacteria that could be present in that sample.
Mm-hmm. Did you find any bad bugs out there?
Well, what we found was you consistently found Clostridium, which we know causes botulism when these bacteria fall into a food processing plant and aren't killed correctly. Those toxins can get into the consumer's body and cause all kinds of problems. You find Clostridium, which people have known Clostridium has been in most aerosols, and that's why you have to be so clean no matter where you are canning your food. So that was one that's all over. Of course, Bacillus, the taxa that we detect is Bacillus anthracis, but we also detect Bacillus thuringiensis and Sirius. They're all very similar in their DNA marker that we use on our test, so we're not differentiating those fine species. But the Bacillus anthracis family, we are finding in most aerosols. Now, the amount required to actually cause an infection would be much more than we're finding, but there definitely is Bacillus organisms flying through the air. Now, that's been known for a long time. There's Bacillus in the soils, agricultural soils. There can be Bacillus there that can be suspended in the atmosphere by wind events and drying. Of course, they turn to spores, and they can get lifted up into the airstream. So finding these things just in the background is good to know and was expected. Some of the things we also found was Francisella, which is causes what we call rabbit fever out here in California and other places, and mostly has been an agricultural problem as well. But Francisella has hit the news in Texas because the biowarfare detectors were finding Francisella in Houston. Or the responders are going off, say, Francisella's here. Then after we went back through the aerosols and through some of the soils nearby these detectors, it was found that there's Francisella-like organisms in the air. And these organisms now we can differentiate from the Francisella tularensis to make sure that the biodetectors only go off when the pathogenic form is there. So what we're finding is that every pathogen has many near neighbors in nature. These are bacteria that share most of the same genome, but a few different genes, and we want to make sure that we can differentiate.
You found some naturally occurring microbes that actually were relatives of microbes that could be used in bioterrorism, right?
That's right, yes. These are the near neighbors. Relatives is a better word for it. And there's types that cover many different categories of pathogens, like we're saying Clostridium, pularensis, and we also found ones that you would maybe not worry about so much, but Campylobacteria or Helicobacteria. These are types of organisms that cause diseases in your intestinal system, and they're found very often in the air. These close relatives of the ones that actually cause ulcers, for instance, or diarrhea when they get consumed. So they're floating in the air. These near relatives are floating in the air. We're not finding a specific one every time that causes the human pathogenesis, but the near neighbors are there. So it's just the diversity that is present in every breath you take is pretty broad and can contain organisms that are very similar, if not sometimes the exact organisms that can cause a problem if you took it in high enough dose. This is important for when we're finding the thresholds of how much bacteria we should detect before an alert is sent out to a city, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to be oversensitive because it's very costly to evacuate, to panic everybody when the amount of bacteria that we're finding of that type isn't large enough.
Obviously, Todd, if there's that many bugs floating around out there, we must have, most of us, a pretty effective immune system just to make sure none of that affects us.
Exactly, and this is probably an important part of developing our immune system, is being exposed to many sources of bacteria. And it could be possible that breathing the air is a way to get an assortment of bacteria from distant and close proximity point sources. So if I was only exposed to the bacteria that is in my carpet on my home or the things that I physically touch a surface, and that's the only thing my immune system gets trained to deal with, then whenever I move even a mile from that environment, I'd be challenged with a whole new set of bacteria that my immune system have to learn quickly to deal with. So it might be that this dispersal mechanism is what aids us from not getting sick whenever we move into a short distance environment, but maybe we do get sick if we go to a different country, for instance, and our body has not seen a bacteria that has traveled across. So this integration of many different point sources into my breath of air could be a protective measure.
Did you find any difference in the bugs in San Antonio and Austin?
Well, I think in general we found nothing in Austin that we didn't already see in San Antonio. So they both had a lot of similar types of organisms, but there was slightly greater diversity in San Antonio than Boston. And we don't know exactly why that is, but there is just more types of bacteria there. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. We don't know yet.
If I worked in medical science, especially in a hospital environment, I'd be very interested in knowing more about this new test that you've developed. I mean, when we start talking about some of the bad bugs that are floating around in our hospitals, it'd be kind of nice to know that, wouldn't it?
Yes, and this is a place where under active research is developing the same platform. This microarray platform is becoming very easy to perform now, and the price is coming down so much that we'd like to see it done in aerosols of our, you know, in all the air systems for hospitals especially, and other places where you have lots of people living close together, whether they be military barracks, any place where a rapid infection can spread over many people who might be immunocompromised or living such close quarters that the communication of the disease is very rapid. So we're designing tests that not only can let you know which group of organisms you're finding. For instance, we have our tests right now, assays for 9,000 types of organisms. We want to break that down to even smaller categories. We believe we can find probably 20,000 different types of bacteria with this test, and that will allow us to differentiate some of these near neighbors from the actual pathogen. So the relatives can get a totally separate signal than the pathogen, and we can better alert people to if they should evacuate a certain area or maybe change the filtration system for a hospital. And this hopefully will help save lives.
The old sick building syndrome, huh?
Right. Yes, and that's a fungus caused disease, and so we're also building a fungus detection system as well, which will be a separate array that will test for the DNA signatures of some of the fungi found in nature and found in medical microbiology.
Could we do the same thing for viruses?
I believe so. There's a couple challenges between the virus and the bacterial assay that actually in the lab, and the fact that for the bacterial assay, what we've centered on is this one gene that's found in all bacteria. As a matter of fact, this one gene is found in everything that's living. It's the gene that allows you to make protein. Every cell needs to make protein to live. And so every cell has got what we call a ribosomal gene. And this is the gene that helps make the ribosome, which is a protein factory in your cell. So because the bacteria all have a very similar sequence, all 9,000 types of this gene is similar in some ways and different in other ways, we can use a similar regions to grab this DNA out by a process called PCR, polymerase chain reaction, which is a way to just amplify just this gene from your sample. So you have millions, billions of copies even from a sample that might only contain a few thousand bacteria. We can get millions of copies of this gene, and then that gene we can throw onto our microarray and then assay for the DNA. Mm-hmm. Viruses are different. They don't have that common conserved nature. The viruses contain a variety of different genes. Usually they don't contain a gene that's conserved among all viruses. So it's a little bit more complex of a test because we have to target that DNA a little differently.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people out there that are sensitive to different kind of bugs. Will this test at some point be cheap enough and on the market so people can test the air in their own homes?
We hope so. We work with Affymetrics, which is the company who actually manufactures our designs, and they've been very committed to making this test come down in price. So they've waived a lot of the design fees for themselves that they would usually profit on so that we can go ahead and get the next generation test out there quicker. Right now, it costs about $150 to do a test, this assay, which profiles 9,000 bacteria. That's actually a very good price when you consider the technology you'd have to normally do to try to test this many bacteria. If you were trying to culture them or do a specific DNA assay for each type, each of those would be very expensive. And, of course, the personnel time to do these tests and the delay of many, many days to get your results back would all be costly.
Yep,
this test only takes about an overnight process, which is pretty rapid, so it's not too expensive.
Todd, I'm out of time. Folks would like to find you in cyberspace. Where do they do that?
Well, a couple places. Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory holds a website called www.lbl.gov where you can find out more information about this. And the project is called the Philo Chip. And we hope to see you online, and feel free to contact us from there.
Todd DeSantis, appreciate your time.
Thank you.